Oh, hello.
You're not even the sick one, are you?
It was a cough. I just came on. Oh. I don't know what happened.
Whoa. I sent you my germs through the phone is what happened.
Gross. I don't want them.
I'm sending them 3,000 miles to you.
No.
Oh, man. Can you hear it? Can you hear it?
I can hear it a little bit, yeah.
Right now I'm doing okay, but... Stuffy. Yeah, man.
Stuffy, yuppie.
So stuffy. Ooh.
Gross.
Yuck.
But you're feeling better now-ish, sort of? On the mend?
Well, on the-ish. Yesterday, I, like, woke up and I felt terrible. And then, and it's been, like, days. And I was like, oh, no, it's, like, still happening. And then, yeah, I, like, had this break yesterday where I was like, whoa, okay, I am only stuffy and now I feel okay. And I, like, went out and did stuff. And I, like, did every like chore that I had been neglecting for days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up this morning and was like, what? Like I felt worse.
Yeah.
And was like, just
your
like,
body being
over.
Like too soon. Stop trying so hard.
That's probably what it was. Yeah. I probably just did too much, but oh man, I literally woke up like hungover. Like I was like super fog, like head foggy and like felt nauseous and I know, I was like, this is not even fun. I didn't even drink.
It's just sickness.
Ugh.
Gross. I'm sorry you're feeling terrible.
That's okay. It was actually really nice to, like, I've been basically under blankets for the past, like, 4 days. And I've been reading our super special Christmas book.
Super special Christmas book. Oh man. So when I went to the book thing and picked up like 15 books for us to
yeah.
read, one of
I saw you did that.
One of them is a Christmas cat murder mystery. And I was like, damn it, we are
one.
Bummer.
Well, Julia, there's always next Christmas.
There's
always
next Christmas.
Christmas in July, low fun prank we could pull.
That's
there's
true.
Always
that's
opportunities.
True. We could just wait until the like hottest day of the year and then be like, surprise, we're doing a Christmas special.
That's what we used to do when we were in when I worked in my former life as a baker at a camp in Colorado. We used to do that in the like mass kitchen. In the middle of July, we would all sneak in the middle of the night, which was terrible for me because I had to be up at like 4 a.m. to like be in to bake.
Yeah.
But we used to do that. We would sneak in really late at night and we would decorate. We would like go all out to like they had intense like Christmas decorations and we would like just do up the whole entire place and like all of the like interns and like, you know, people younger than us that came in would, it was just really fun. It was like, mm-hmm. super, like a surprise for people, but yeah, so we could do that. You heard it here first.
Yeah. Christmas in July, get ready.
Oh my God. I had like a bunch of things listed out that I was going to like tell you and then like do to introduce the book. I had grand plans and then I was like, I should make a list. And then I forgot. And now my head is full of, yes, and but we are reading Welcome to Paranormal Captivity, the Woo! Christmas time edition.
Yeah, Christmas. Sorry we missed Hanukkah.
Yeah, sorry guys. Happy holidays all around to everyone.
Happy holidays to everyone. We're just focusing on Christmas.
I know. We're jerks. We're sorry. But yeah, happy holidays to everyone who celebrates whatever you celebrate. Julia chose a book this time that I'm really enjoying so far.
Yeah.
It is a little out of the Cat Who world genre right now. My God, did you hear that? Murphy just so indignantly like chirped at me.
Yeah, I heard it.
Did you?
Yeah.
She's sitting in her little cat bed at the on the desk at the end of our bed, and she is just like, I think
not
she
happy.
was just like, yeah, I think she's just like, why are you making so much noise?
She's like, why are
And
you celebrating
screaming.
Hanukkah,
Yeah.
asshole?
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. We'll do a Hanukkah book next year.
Yeah, I think we might be hard pressed to find one, but I'm sure we'll come up with something. There was, so when I was perusing the mystery section in the book
Oh,
thing.
Yeah, tell me all about that. I want to know all about that.
Yeah, so the book thing is a Baltimore unique institution. It's basically like a giant warehouse where they just like put a bunch of books and they're like, anyone can come take whatever they want at any point. And well, not at any point, it's only open on the weekends. At any point on the weekends.
So at any point during a limited amount of time.
Any point for like 4 hours during weekends. But yeah, you go in and I always feel really guilty going there. I'm like, well, I don't want to like take that many books. And they have like boxes for you to like load up books if you want. And I always walk in and I'm like, I'll just take a few. But then you get in there and it's just like so overwhelming and there are so many books and you can just like feel the panic of the volunteers because there's not enough space for them to put out all of the books that they have. And so you, when, like, this always happens to me. I don't know. It's like maybe a phenomenon that happens to everyone who walks in. But like you walk in and you're like, oh my God, there's no more space for the books. I have to take like 20 of them to
I have to
help
help these
them
books.
make more space for all of these books. And so I always end up walking out with like so many books because I panic and I'm like, do I want this one? Like, I may as well take it. It's free and they need more space.
Yeah, that's so nuts that it's free. It must just be like, is it like an extension of another like donation center or something? Is it like a
I don't think so. I think people just donate enough to this place that they just have like an infinite amount of books. And I
wow,
think
that's
it's,
really cool.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why they're only open on the weekends is because it is entirely free and entirely donation based and everyone running it is volunteers that like can't work there. And
Sure.
so they have like other jobs and they just come in and volunteer for like a few hours on the weekends. So I'm sure if
That's
it were
so
open,
cool, though.
Yeah, if it were open longer, they could probably like get rid of more of their books, but they're only open on the weekends. So there's like never enough space and they can never get rid of as many books as there are coming in, which is like
So
kind of cool because it'll just be open forever or it'll be like running forever.
It's almost like that same principle of like, you know, those free like neighborhood libraries of like those little basically they're like little like they look like little birdhouses or something that people put books in. It's a cool idea.
It is a cool idea. Yeah, and I feel like people usually aren't like that stingy with their books like they are with other things because like books you kind of just read once and like unless they're really special to you, you don't really like keep them. At least I don't. Like if I kept all of the books that I read, like my house would just be like, I would have bookshelves everywhere. So I feel like people are always trying to get rid of books.
Well, yeah, I think that's true. Cause I mean, especially people who like love books, it's always such a toss up of like, well, I love these books and I want to have them all in my house, but I need to make room for new books that I'm going to read. And like, you know, it's always such a, it's a circle. It's like the circle of the book life.
Yeah. And people are always wanting to read new books. So it doesn't really make sense for them to keep all of their old books because who has time to like reread old books and read new books?
Yeah, certainly not me. I barely have time to read the books that we do. Although I'm so proud of us. This podcast has really like upped my book intake in the year.
Yeah. Me too. Mostly because I don't really read or do podcasty things. So it's upping both of my intakes.
We're just getting you getting you real well rounded.
Yeah.
So wait, you were saying, what were you saying about the books that you got? Oh, you were saying because it was a Christmas cat murder mystery.
Oh, I actually forgot my original point. There was something else I was gonna say.
I thought there was too.
Oh,
that's
it was
funny.
About Jewish books.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So yeah, when I was in there perusing the mystery series, like the volunteers don't have time to like organize the books in any way, so you have to like literally go through and like check every single book to like which is why it's so overwhelming. You can spend like all weekend there. But I was looking through the mystery section there was a like rabbi series. There was like a rabbi someone, and then it was like different days of the week. And I need to look it up again because I almost started pulling them because I saw so many that I was like, this is it's like the whole series here. Maybe I should pull these. But then I was like, no, there's not cats in this. That's ridiculous.
But it was a cozy mystery?
It was in the mystery section. I can't promise it was cozy.
That's true. We never really know until we get into them how cozy they are.
Yeah. I actually did pull one that said cat. That had cat in the title, and then I read the back and I was like, oh, this is not cozy, we can't read this.
Yeah, so there probably is going to be a little bit of, as we like look through these books, we might hit or miss. Some have more cats than others. This one, so the book we have today,
this one I'm so disappointed in. Well, I can't say that because I'm enjoying it, but
yeah keep I'm going, keep going. So it's called Purring Around the Christmas Tree.
It is. Oh my god, you're right. I was like, that can't be the one we picked, but that totally is the one we picked because there are surprisingly like no cats in it.
Yeah, so the whole thing of this book that we've been discovering is that it is very Christmas heavy. It is not quite as cat heavy, but
it's pretty animal heavy, but there are no animal sleuths is the thing. Mm-hmm. There are lots of animal characters, dog heavy, a few cats spread in there. But yeah, there's no, like, I would say significant animal yet.
Yeah, I feel like that is such a specific thing to The Cat Who and like maybe a few other series, that like the cats are actually helping in the sleuthing.
Yeah.
Because, or the animals at all. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is like something so specific. I still have a theory, which I don't know if it'll play out, but I have a theory that because I have to think, because it's called Purring Around the Christmas Tree, mm-hmm. that, and so far our main character has, one of our cat introductions was the main character Stan, short for Kristen. Stan has an orange tabby cat.
Yeah, but one of the things I will say about this book is that there are like a million characters, and that was one of the reviews on Amazon. When I was looking it up, it was like, this is a good book, but there's no, like, backstory for people who haven't read the rest of the series. And there are a million main characters, and a lot of the animals have people names, and so it gets really confusing. And I will say all of those things are true.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I have definitely found that there are a lot of characters, and a lot of characters in couples that have been hard to keep track.
Yes.
Like, cousins, brothers, sisters, people that are... Because it's also super charming. Sorry, so this book is Purring Around the Christmas Tree by Liz Mulgrove. And it is a cozy mystery set in New England, the small town of Frog's Ledge, which I was picturing as Stars Hollow, 100%. And it's kind of like
pretty
that.
Much
like,
is.
Yeah, because you can like walk to different, like most of the places and houses you can walk between.
And there's like one of everything, like one bar, one bed and breakfast, one, I don't know, what else is there? Those are the like only two places. Oh, there's like one coffee shop.
Yeah, to the point that like everyone is a small business owner that we know so far. And it's yeah. I'm like, how, everyone's just trading money.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, so it is really, it's, so far it's really fun. It's like,
oh, Benedict. There we go.
Benedict.
All right. And then Nutty is the other one that we haven't met yet.
Nutty. Okay, cool. Benedict and Nutty. So we do have two cats that are kind of dangled in front of us. We also have the story that, well, we can get to that a little bit later, but we do have a story about some feral cats that are rescued and taken care of. So that's something too. But here's my theory.
That's true. That's at the Christmas tree place.
Yeah, it's at the Christmas tree farm, and it's about the guy that is murdered.
Dun, 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 dun.
So my theory is, because this is, you know, because it's called Purring Around the Christmas Tree, and because we haven't seen a ton of the cats quite yet, I think that the cats might feature somehow in the conclusion, even if she's just, like, stroking a cat when she uncovers what she, you know, has an epiphany or whatever.
Yeah. Or, like, a cat jumps on someone's lap and doesn't purr, and then jumps on someone else's lap and does purr, and she's like, you're an asshole, the cat didn't purr for you. Murderer!
Then that is a cat sleuth, and we would be honored to have that cat sleuth in our midst.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So far, I'm into the story, but yes. A little disappointed in the cat appearances.
And the cat content, yes, agreed. Yeah. But there is a ton of dog content. So basically, so the story features Stan Connor, who is our main character, and she has recently moved to Frog Ledge to be with her boyfriend in this smaller town that she didn't think she would like, but now she loves. And the fun part of it is that she is actually opening a dog and cat bakery, which super is fucking adorable. Cute. Yeah. So we get a lot of really great, I feel like this is like an extra cozy mystery than even like the Cat Who, because we get so many scenes of like baking and like the neighborhood dogs coming in and like, mm-hmm. you know, people putting in specialized orders for cat treats. And yeah, we just get like so much extra like cozy content, I think. Yeah. Cozy content.
And I feel like it does a really good job of like describing things, which I a lot of times feel like is unnecessary, but then like it really does help you get a better picture of things. So like you get the image of like, you know, she has her like moss green walls and like her granite countertops and her like bright red like dog was it a bone the dog bone shaped like entrance sign, and like her little display cases are shaped like dogs and like a dog and a cat with their like tails intertwining,
which is super cute. It really does set the mood like pretty perfectly and kind of throws you into that environment, which is like what I really want. Okay, so this story starts I don't know, they don't say exactly when in December, but it is kind of early in December. Everyone's just getting into the holiday spirit, and we meet up with Stan at the Christmas tree lighting ceremony of Frog's Leap. So they're at the Christmas tree lighting. They have like a fun little, the town is having a, you know, a whole night of it, and stores are staying open later.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like a First Friday type event, and it sounds sort of like the town is like picking up its tourism industry, if you will, in the recent years. And so they're doing like a big tree lighting celebration, and then like all of the stores are going to stay open, and this is when she's doing her like soft opening for her store, and so it's exciting for her. And then she's going to do like a grand opening the next day, so you kind of get the excitement of like both things. But halfway through, I will also include that, like, she's on the steering committee for the whole, like, Christmas celebration thing that's happening. Yeah. And it sounds kind of like another part of this town, which makes it even, like, cozier and more charming, is that they do, like, holiday celebrations for, like, every holiday, like, not just the big, like, Christmas, 4th of July type of holidays, but for like kind of little like made of holidays too. Like I forget the example that she gave, but like National like Hot Dog Day, or you know, like random things like that. So I think it, I mean, it sounds like her steering committee that she's on is in charge of like all of the holiday stuff, and she's just like jumping right into it and excited about all the like planning and tourism. But the new thing this year was that instead of, and I already forgot what they did the previous years, but instead of what they were doing the previous years, whatever it was, it doesn't matter. They were going to
tell us.
Yeah, maybe they didn't. But the new thing this year was that they made this like giant custom sled that Santa was going to ride in on.
Yeah.
With like elves, and I don't think it was pulled by anything. I think it was just like a cool sled that was going to like.
No, it was pulled by someone's husband's snowmobile. So they were snowmobiling him in.
All right. Snowmobile and Santa. So the sleigh comes in, everyone's really excited about it, and then it kind of like goes behind the Christmas tree, and the mayor comes up and like flips the switch really fast and is like, "And the tree's lit, everybody go enjoy your day, hooray, it's over, bye.
Get the fuck out of here."
And so Stan is obviously like, "Oh wait a minute, like that was fast. Like, wasn't Santa supposed to come out? I think something's wrong. So she goes up, and it sounds like the mayor is her soon-to-be stepfather.
Yeah, who she doesn't really like.
Who she doesn't, it sounds like, maybe had a thing with in other books where, like, they didn't get along and, like, kind of butted heads a little bit. It also sounds like she had that with, like, all of her family. So there's really no backstory that we get. I'm sure we would if we had read the other books. But it does sound like she had, like, maybe some history. It sounds kind of like her family is maybe, like, well off and, like, a little bit pampered in certain ways.
Yeah, for sure.
But that in this book, the kind of image we get is that her sister and her mom have moved to this small town and, like, really toned it down and, like, come to terms with being, like, a normal person and just enjoying life in their, like, quaint, cozy little town.
Yeah.
And so everyone seems to be getting along, like, a little bit better in this book.
Yeah.
From what we can tell.
True.
But, yeah. But so she goes up and is like, hey, Tony, the mayor, what's going on? Wasn't Santa supposed to come out? And he's like, oh yeah, maybe Santa's like a little bit dead. So that's problem number one, and where the mystery comes from, because when so it sounded like when the sleigh started its journey, Santa was very much alive, and then he keeled over and had some sort of attack. What they originally were like, it was probably a heart attack. Maybe not so much a heart attack. We shall see. Well, it's definitely not a heart attack. We know at this point, halfway through the book, that it was poison. Which he was poisoned, but at the beginning, everyone was like, it's probably a heart attack. Don't even worry about it. It's fine. But yeah, he died halfway through his journey from the museum, which was their starting point, to the Christmas tree. And it sounded like a couple of elves were witness to this, including her next door neighbor.
Yeah, her friend Amara.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the only elf that we hear from.
Yeah, and I thought at one point Amara was talking about how, like, there actually weren't other ones who saw, 'cause I think she was the only one in the sleigh with Santa.
Oh, okay. Well, then just one elf was witness to this event.
Yeah, so then the rest of the night, I actually really liked the way that the rest of the night panned out, because I was telling Julia, at first I wasn't really sure that I liked the writing style. It seemed like a little bit clunky at the beginning, and like this event was happening, and it was like, it seemed just kind of unclear what was happening. But then basically, like, most of the first half that Julie and I just finished, we're up to the chapters are really short too, so they're like 25 chapters just in like the first half.
The whole book is like 56 chapters, which is absurd in my mind, but yeah, each chapter is like maybe 2 to 3 pages long.
Yeah, so we just finished chapter 25, and in that amount of time we've only really gone through one and a half days, right? Or two days.
I think about 2 full days. Yeah.
So that night, we get like most of, I would say like a good fourth of the book is just that night. And like right after Santa dies, and then all of the things that surround it, and kind of like the web of an aftermath that happens as people, you know, start to find that out. And then the things that, because Kristen is, you know, sort of in this place in the community where she has clearly solved crimes for them before, or, you know, been involved in other mysteries before. And so she kind of grudgingly, because she apparently had like a, again, we don't get the full backstory, but like, it seems to have had kind of a little bit of a traumatizing experience over the summer where there was another mystery. But throughout the night, she kind of positions herself in a way of like investigating, and also trying to like go between all of her friends who are now, you know, dealing with the fallout of this. Because what we find out next is that, so Santa was supposed to be this guy, Seamus, who is actually her boyfriend, Jake's uncle, and one of her good friends, on again, off again lovers. He mostly lives in Ireland, but he comes over to Frogsleep. once or twice a year, usually in the winter and the summer. And he always plays Santa. So it's like well known that this Santa is Seamus until Santa dies and they post. I think Stan actually pulls off the beard and Stan's like, I don't know who this is. This isn't Seamus. And it turns out that it's this other guy, Harold Dewey, who has
also
been
a seasonal person in the town.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like not going to get the town's name right.
It's Frogsleep. No.
Frogsleep.
Shit. Frogsleep is the winery that I like in Napa. It's Frog's Ledge.
Frog's
I knew
Ledge.
I was going to do that.
Frog's Ledge. Yeah, so the man who is murdered is also a like kind of seasonal character. He seems kind of like an in and out type of person who comes and does like maybe a few like odd jobs here and there for some people who like are still on good terms with him, and then kind of disappears for a while and maybe comes back like, you know, half a year later, something like that. So people know him, and some people have better relationships with him than others, but everyone's just kind of like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, so I feel like this is kind of where all of the like the infinite amount of characters come in, and they are all, I would say, very well tied together. Like you kind of get the sense of the whole community, and you're like, oh, you can't really like write out any of these characters because they all like do play different roles, but there are just so many of them.
Yeah, so, and they all like factor into the mystery too, because it's kind of, I think that's why I like it, because it's also like gossipy, and each character has like another little hint towards something that's like the bigger picture.
Yeah, this town is very well thought out, and I would almost say to the point that like it might even be a real town where this author lives.
Yeah, I think I did read that author is from Connecticut.
Yeah, probably. Like I wouldn't be surprised if this was like very loosely based on like characters in her life who she's just like, this crazy person. But yeah, Char is kind of like one of those crazy people where she just seems like a little extra.
She's definitely a little extra. Yeah.
Like her character is like, you always get the sense that she's like maybe wearing like a fur and like leopard print high heels at all times.
Yeah, definitely. But her thread into the mystery is that Seamus is now missing because everyone is like, well, if Seamus isn't Santa, where is he? Seamus? And so Char is also looking for her husband, Ray, who went into Boston with Seamus to go to a poker. I guess they do an annual poker night in Boston. And
the night before.
Right. And he was supposed to be back. They were obviously both supposed to be back because Seamus was supposed to be back to play Santa. And Ray said that he would be back. He's apparently really a really dependable guy, like wouldn't just take off and not tell anyone.
He was supposed to be back to feed the alpacas, so that's an important job.
Oh my god, he's got alpacas to feed.
Yeah, and everyone is like really surprised that he's missing because they're like, oh my god, like I don't think we've ever seen him not next to Char. So he does seem like very like steady, stable type of person who like somehow befriended this crazy Seamus character and like goes to play poker once a year with him.
They're
like somehow friends, but yeah, anyway, so he's missing too.
Yeah, so they're missing, and so Jesse, who is Stan's boyfriend Jake's sister,
and also head police officer,
is pretty immediately like investigating and is like super brusque and like trying to just like brush everyone off. And so then we just kind of go through Stan's night of trying to comfort Char, and then she's also trying to find her friend Izzy, who provided the food and drinks, the refreshments for Santa had his own special refreshments,
which we learned from her elf friend and neighbor Amara. What is his name? Who got murdered?
Harold.
That Harold came and showed up to be Santa and seemed pretty fine, like wasn't very talkative, but seemed like totally normal until he ate like 5 cookies and drank like a million cups of cider yeah. and then halfway through his sleigh ride clutched his stomach instead of his heart and keeled over. Yeah. So she was like, I don't know, that seems pretty suspicious. I don't think it was a heart attack. And so then Stan and I think Jesse kind of at the same time for different reasons come to the conclusion that like maybe he was poisoned.
Yes.
Which led to which led to her friend Izzy, who provided the food and drinks to Santa, to be under suspicion.
Yeah.
Which, and it didn't help that she was also missing for half the night.
Yeah, which we still don't know about. That's still a mystery. Yeah,
we still don't, I mean, she said she was busy and that her dog was sick. Her geriatric dog was sick, which I'm kind of like, yeah, I'd totally stay home if one of my cats were sick. But, you know, that's not a good alibi for a police officer.
I also don't really believe her. I don't know why, but I just don't believe her about that.
I don't know. I feel like everyone's keeping some sort of secrets. Like, she kept the secret about, like, having a run-in with Harold, the dead guy, like, a year beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Which was another secret that came out within this half of the book that she didn't tell Stan, one of her best friends, if not her best friend.
Yeah.
And so Stan was like, ooh, what else is she keeping from me? But yeah, I feel like everyone kind of had like weird random things come out.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Half of the book. What else did we have come out? We did eventually find Izzy, by the way. She wasn't missing for that long.
Yeah, no, she came back that night. So they had like a little confrontation in the back of, so during all of this, Stan's running between places and trying to find people. Her shop is actually
opening her shop.
Oh, but yeah. So she has like one employee, Brenna, is running the shop while she's like running around. Mm-hmm. And so Stan does eventually get to the shop and Jesse is there like grilling people. And then Izzy shows up in the back. So Stan lets her in the back sneakily. And so they talk a little bit. And then Jesse finds them in the back and confronts them both. And is like, I'm taking your cookies for investigation. So we actually don't know yet. So we do find out later in this half of the book that he did die of poisoning. But we don't know how they know that. So we don't know if they found that. I guess they must have found it. Jesse mentions that she sent away the blood work for a toxicology report, but we don't know if they found that through an autopsy, through the blood work, or by testing the food, which they have been testing the food as well. So there are numerous scientific experiments going on.
Yeah, and there is also like there is supposed to be like kind of no outside people involved. Yes. In like any of the food and drink, or like even in the room where they were getting Santa ready anyway, like it was supposed to be the elves, the people on the committee, and Izzy, who was providing the food and drinks. But as we find out from Izzy, she actually had someone else do that, like drop off the food and drinks for her. So she wasn't there for a while, and it sounds like maybe the museum people let the other girl in. But then, like, she was supposed to lock up afterwards, so we don't know if she actually did lock up or if there was, like, a time there where, like, everything was kind of unmanned. So it was supposed to be, like, a very, like, tightly run ship, but I think there was a little bit of room for error in there. So that opened it up to, like, well, anyone could have done it at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And we find that out that night, one of the last things before going home that Stan and Jake do together. They're driving home. And they see Jesse's cop car in the museum parking lot. And so Stan makes Jake stop and is like, I'm going to go talk to her. And Jake's like, she's not going to let you. She's clearly not impressed with you being around all the time. And but she runs in anyway. And she's like, Jesse, someone has to give you a walkthrough of what happened. And Jesse's like, oh, you're right. Someone does. Of like how the back room worked. And so Stan does that for Jesse, and you know that's how they kind of find out that there was a time frame in which Santa's little room was unmanned by anyone from the steering committee.
Yeah, so then I think later that night or the end of the night, Stan and Jake go home and we meet Seamus's two sons, so Jake's cousins, that I want to say Declan, but I think that's the dog's name.
No, it was hysterical because we meet Declan and Duncan in the same fucking sentence. And Declan is the cousin and Duncan is the Weimaraner.
Okay. Duncan is Jake's Weimaraner. Okay.
Yes.
Declan. Okay, so Declan and then the other one. I'm terrible with names. This is like the worst kind of book for me.
I don't know why I remember them. I just don't maybe remember they're, them. Like, fun and Irish, but the other cousin is Liam.
Liam, okay.
Because it's a huge Irish family, and so they're like...
It is a huge Irish family. So Declan and Liam and Seamus are all very Irish names. Jake, not so much.
No, yeah. And I think
Jake's dad is Peter?
Yeah.
So anyway, we meet the cousins, Seamus's children, and they are very not concerned about him. It sounds like they have kind of... Liam kind of like a rocky relationship with their dad. They're kind of like, he might be dead, he might not be. Like, what do we care? And so we don't really get like details at this point as to why some people are like very unconcerned about Seamus, because he does seem like kind of an unreliable character, just kind of like off doing his own thing, maybe getting himself in trouble sometimes. But all we hear from Jake, which is Stan's boyfriend, is like, yeah, but like he's a good guy, he doesn't deserve it. And no one else seems to be stepping up with any other explanations as to why people are of differing opinions.
Yeah. And but, Stan keeps asking too. Stan's like, well,
yeah, what? Like, why is everyone kind of like being iffy about this? And why are his sons so incredibly unconcerned as to if he is dead or not?
Yeah,
at this point we don't know and have no clue. He's just gone.
Yeah.
But they're still very unconcerned, and so that's kind of like a intro into that drama that we will hopefully hear more about in the second half of the book, because I am very interested.
Also, I just realized, are you saying Seamus? Because I think it's Seamus.
Is it Seamus?
I think that's how you spell Seamus, but you say it Seamus.
Okay, great. Well,
I could be wrong.
You could just cut Seamus into all of my sentences so far.
As long as you just say it like this, Seamus, and then I'll just say it.
Seamus.
Seamus. Oh, so funny.
Oh, great. Yeah. So I don't know how to pronounce Irish names. I'm going to read all of them wrong.
But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Okay, great.
I am not Liz Walgrove, the author. So
no, that's fair.
Well, anyway, where were we?
Good lord. I guess the next day.
Yeah. So then, the next day. As a former baker, I find it hysterical that she keeps like, quote unquote, getting up early to go into the bakery, and she's like, oh, I had to get up at like 7, I'm gonna get there by 8, and I'm like, that is not a baker's schedule.
That's not where you start. That's not when you start baking.
No, you get up at 3 and you get there by 4, like.
Yeah, well, it sounds like her sister and probably soon to be brother-in-law did actually get up at like 3 and get there by 4, because she got there and all of her store was like set up for her.
Yeah, based on, super nice.
Yeah, based on her sister's adorable boyfriend just being like, I bet she's busy, let's do this for her. Not even prodded.
No, so great, yeah. So they basically like opened her store for her on her like actual day of her opening. There's like a cute little scene, a couple scenes, like a couple chapters, I think, of the store being open and people like waiting to come in with their animals, and it sounds so cute. It's like this little cafe, you can like sit there with your pet and like order, basically like order pastries for your pets, and then,
I think
like,
there's also
there.
People food too though, or feed people like drinks. I think people were drinking coffee.
Well, but she got that from Izzy, so I was thinking like,
maybe you can order from other places and bring it in.
Well, yeah, I think. Yeah, I was confused because I thought that was just like refreshments for like the opening day, and that she didn't normally have people food there, which I was like, you should at least have like coffee or something for people.
I know. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, that's so cute. She has like coffee for people to sit and chat. But then that would be taking business away from Izzy.
Right. Exactly.
So maybe she doesn't.
unless she's buying.
But she had creamer.
That's true.
That, she did because already... that is an integral part of the story. Yeah. She did have to run out for more creamer.
That's true, which I love that that's like the integral part is going to get more half and half. Because she does, yeah. So this like cute little old man is like, I need more half and half. I can't have just milk. And so she's like, oh, just a minute. I'll run across to the shop to like the like local another like small business that this woman Abby runs. A little corner and store. So yeah, exactly. And so she gets there, and this woman is just the busiest of busybodies.
Let me tell you everything that I've heard.
Yeah, it is clearly trying to get information from Stan, because everyone kind of knows that Stan was, like, you know, involved. Not actually involved, but just, like, saw a lot. And
then she is also, like, dating a relative of the police force.
Right.
And is, like, basically a part of that family. Everyone seems to be, like, sort of connected through family, but she is like the most connected through family to like a lot of the main characters.
Yeah
including not the guy who died, but you know, like people who are disappeared and should have been dead, and you know, best friends with the suspect and all of that. So she is connected to like kind of everything.
It's true, she really is. I mean, I guess it is, like, that's the way small towns work, is that like everyone is just connected somehow, but she is you're right, like more connected to almost everyone involved. She's the epicenter. But yeah, so when she gets there to the so they're like, you know, gossiping and whatever, and I can't remember there's like a little tidbit that she learns. Because doesn't Abby start immediately, like, bashing? Oh, because she's like, oh, I wish Seamus had died instead of Harold. He's, like, much more deserving of it. And Stan's like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah, apparently Abby is, like, not necessarily the nicest person on the planet, but that was, like, a shockingly mean statement. So she was kind of like, oh, my goodness, tell me more.
Yeah, and then is it right after that that she runs? Oh, so the other thing that happens in the store is that she has to pay $5 for a quart of half and half, which is
which is absurd. Yeah, so she was like, what about these prices? And Abby's like, well, I don't know, you know, like, gotta increase them sometimes. And very, I don't know, she didn't give like a, I would say, satisfactory explanation, but we do learn later that she, so later, actually kind of in the same realm of like time frame, I guess, Stan leaves the store and runs into Vivian, who is Seamus's kind of like on again off again seasonal romance when he's in town.
Yes, exactly.
For like 45 years, like she lives with her sister on a farm, and you know, her sister is very like, she is described as very like kind of, you know, clean cut, maybe a little bit more like straight edge, kind of serious, whereas Vivian is described as like kind of a little bit wild and out there and a little bit like flighty, and so she's the one who's been romancing Seamus on his seasonal visits.
Yeah.
so Stan runs into her, and then Abby, the store owner, comes out and is like, let me give you a piece of my mind. Your boyfriend.
Yeah.
And so they kind of get into it because Vivian is very like, oh no, he's great. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, this, he's wonderful. You're just jealous because he didn't pick you. And Abby's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, your boyfriend is like ruining my life. And, you know, apparently her husband, maybe, is Abby married? Yeah. Her husband?
Yeah, yeah.
Got into, like, some sort of bad business deal with Seamus, and now she's having to, like, raise all the rates in her store to pay off debts that they've accrued, and so she's bitter and angry. Meanwhile, in the same conversation, before Abby comes out and starts yelling at Vivian for very little reason, because Vivian has nothing to do with it.
I know.
We do also learn from Vivian that she is very excited to go on this wonderful trip to Turks and Caicos, right?
Yeah, which is hysterical, because that's where Johanna goes with, that's where Austin's family has like a house or something.
Oh, really?
I mean,
I've never been there. You're great.
No, I have not.
I'm sure it's lovely. But yeah, apparently Seamus has promised to take Vivian there, and she's like, yeah, maybe we'll just stay, maybe we're moving there. And she's like gone on a shopping trip and has these like cashmere sweaters that she's like, yeah, I have nice things now, I'm going on a fancy trip.
And she's also like, Seamus has money now, which yeah, is another like, important detail.
Right, like he had some business go really well, he's getting some bonuses, he is successful, and I'm gonna go live with him on Turks and Caicos.
Which, meanwhile, do you have the same like kind of obvious feeling about the, so one of the other details that we're told early is that, so basically a newspaper guy, Cyril, comes up to Stan at one point, like trying to get her to quote on the, you know, murder, mm-hmm. Before it's even declared a murder, and she's like, no. But he basically like gives her all of this like the news basically. He's like, yeah, here's what's happening and here's what's happening. It's kind of just like a standard deliver of like
news. Oh, and here's an offhand comment about this big news story in Ireland, yes, where Seamus is from, that no one's looking at because
yes,
it doesn't seem to matter.
Exactly. Like, I think it's so obvious. So the
story... Yeah, it's because it's so out of place. It's like the one out of place thing in the book where you're like, this yeah, is nonsense information if it's not included in the murder.
Yes, agreed. It's just like too much there. Yeah, like everything else I'm enjoying because I don't really, I can't like quite guess where things are going, but that this was the one piece that I was like, well, Seamus obviously stole this fucking like important book that's missing from Ireland where he's from. Like, what?
Or he's like in with, or he's like dealing in like getting it sold or something, you know, yes, like he's exactly, involved somehow and this is what's gone wrong.
Yeah, so the news story is basically that the Book of Kell, I think that's how it's written out.
I don't know, it's some like religious yeah, book, I think.
Yeah, it's basically like the first four books of the New Testament, I think. It's something, yeah, it's something religious-y.
Yeah.
I
should probably look it up, but I know, if I'm not going to look up Shakespeare for the cat who knew Shakespeare, I'm certainly not going to look up the Book of Kell for something that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Fair. But yeah, it's basically the news article is just that it's been stolen from Ireland.
Yeah, okay, the newspaper guy, like, randomly has a connection to it because his like dad wrote an article on it like years ago, and he was like, oh, this is the one international story that I'm following for this local newspaper.
Yeah, like literally nothing else. Yeah. Oh my god, it is like it seems super obvious that Seamus is involved with the theft of the Book of Kell in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but I will say I was surprised because we do learn sort of towards the end of where the section that we are reading, we do learn that he and Ray didn't actually make it to the poker game that they were supposed to make it to.
That's true.
Which I was surprised because I thought that things were going to go awry when he tried to like bet the Book of Kell at the poker game.
That's fair. That's not a bad guess.
Yeah, but they never even showed up.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, I guess I'm assuming in some way, shape, or form he like, they started driving and he just like veered Ray off the course and like somehow it's still just so mysterious. Like it seems so crazy to me that Ray is involved because Ray right, seems like such a random, just like super dependable, not involved in shady shit guy.
Yeah, for sure. And I would feel like he got like sort of kidnapped by Shane a little bit, like, we're going that's on right, our like yearly adventure to the poker game, and Ray's like, that's about as much adventure as I can take, and Seamus is like, just kidding, we're gonna go steal a car.
Yeah. Seamus is like, wait, let's just make one quick stop, and then they're disappeared for 2 days.
Right.
Or longer. I mean, they're still not back. Yeah, shit, there was something else I was gonna say about that. Oh, so we find out that they haven't gone to the poker game because I don't know that a ton happens in between. Like, so Stan closes her store. She goes, finally does get back. And everyone's mm-hmm, still kind of hanging out there. And then she goes to, so her boyfriend Jake owns the only bar in town. What is it called? McSwigs? Is that right? Did I make that up or is that right?
I don't know. That's a really funny name, though. I hope it's right.
I think it is because his last name is McGee, and it's a bar. I think it's McSwigs. I'm gonna keep calling it that.
That's great.
See if that's wrong or not. So she goes to.
I feel like I feel like half the time I like didn't read the book and I'm just like, yeah, that sounds right, because I just like, I don't know why names don't stick.
Well, I do the thing which I need to like actually get a hold of and not do this anymore. But you know when someone introduces themselves to you and then you're just like so nervous about like meeting a new person that they're like, oh hi, my name is blah blah blah, and you're like, yes, my name is Eva, hi, and then you're like, god damn it, I didn't even hear their name because I was too busy like trying not to be a weirdo because I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, see, I got in the habit of repeating their name right after they say it. Oh, so they'll be smart. Like they introduce themselves, they're like, hi, I'm like, I can't think of any names
right have now. You never heard a name before? Well, you are bad with names. My point was that maybe you were doing that. You were getting nervous with the people of the book. And you were like, oh, I'm trying to impress Jake and McSwigs so much that
I can't remember what McSwigs is called.
Yeah.
Of course. But anyway, for a bar. Yeah, no, repeat it. I will just say, like, repeating a name right after someone says theirs is, like, a good way to trick them into thinking you'll remember.
Okay, fair. I'll have to try that. I'll try that on you at Christmas.
Yeah, great. I still don't remember the names, but I do at least look like I'm making an effort.
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting advice from someone who's not really, like, following all the way through with, like, actually remembering the names.
Yeah.
So we'll just.
I'm great at giving advice, terrible with remembering names. Including bar names, apparently.
Well, McSwig sounds great. I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, we're going to go with it. I'm going to look it up, but we're going to go with it.
Okay, yeah, you look it up. And we'll just see. We'll wager if I'm right or not. But yeah, so the bar sounds really cute because Jake has like put a lot of, you know, time and effort into building it into this like really great local bar. And so Stan closes her shop, goes over there early. Her shop closes at 4. And so she goes over there, and so it's like, you know, kind of a lull, like a lunch, you know, kind of before everyone, you know, gets off work and actually goes to a bar. So she's sitting there eating a plate of fries, which, like, woman after my own heart.
Yeah, duh. Fries are the best.
Yeah. And so, like, they, basically what happens there is that a guy, Kevin, comes in, and he is apparently looks kind of like a mafia guy who's had his nose broken a bunch of times. I mean, I added the mafia thing. She didn't add the mafia thing, but she did say that his nose looked really, his like, nose boxer-ish. Looked,
like, messed up.
Yeah, exactly. So she's like, well, who is this guy? Like, I don't recognize him, and this is a small town. And he comes in asking for Jake, and she's like, oh, but really, who are you? Now I need to know everything. So he has this long conversation with Jake in the back of the bar, and then Jake immediately tells Stan that Kevin is a friend of Seamus's, who came to Seamus's hometown because he was worried about him because, well, not hometown, but, you know, to Frog's Ledge. Because he was worried about Seamus because he didn't even show up at their yearly poker game, and he was like, that's not like him. I'm gonna go figure out, you know, where, you know, what's going on, or at least like alert their family or his family. And then also gives the bit of information that Seamus was potentially spotted at the docks, the harbor of Boston, where like the freight ships come in. Around, I didn't quite get the details of this whole interaction, but it sounded like he was at some kind of altercation where a freight car, like a freight truck, like a the big freight carton.
I got confused about the car thing too. So a freight cargo ship came in carrying an actual car.
Oh, okay, yeah, I didn't quite get that.
Yeah, I had to reread it a couple times too because I was like, car, what are they, what, like, what? I, yeah, anyway, so yeah, so the freight, the big like cargo ship came in bringing with it a car from somewhere in Europe. And then that was intercepted and someone tried to steal it, and there was like a shootout and like something, and you know, like multiple parties involved, and then the thief did get away with the car, but then ended up crashing it somewhere and it like went up in flames.
Yeah, it like went into like a ball of fiery fury.
Yeah.
According to like the, so they double check it too. Like they didn't even just take this guy's word for it. Jake had like looked up you know, all the big like, you know, Boston newspapers, and they were all reporting on it. So they were like, oh shit, like that actually happened. So like maybe this guy's not totally full of shit, even though he's still a little bit, there's still something going on there.
Yeah, there's I think it's the like the motive behind it that people are a little bit like, why is he actually here? Because yeah, it does, I feel like Stan kind of takes him at his word a little bit and is like, yeah, he's concerned about his friend probably, but everyone else is like, no, his friends are shady as fuck, like don't trust him.
But Stan's also kind of a pot stirrer, and like the number of times that we get Stan's inner monologue versus what she actually says to people, she's really like, when she was talking to Amara and Amara was like, yeah, what was Amara saying? I can't remember, but Amara was basically Stan goes through the role of, you know, double checking on all of her friends numerous times. So we go back to Amara's house and we go back to Char's a couple times. And when we're back at Amara's the morning after the crazy night, and Amara is trying to say, basically go down the road of Amara is trying to say that she thinks that it wasn't Harold, that whoever it was trying to kill, that it was actually Seamus. And Stan goes out of her way to like not even just play devil's advocate, but to like almost as if she's like convincing Amara that that's not the case, even though Stan 100% thinks that herself. So like Stan's kind of playing some games too that I've noticed, because she does that with Kevin too, where like she invites him to stay, but then she's also, I don't think she
let's get him drunk.
Yes, she's pulling a Quillerin. She's like, let's get him drunk and accuse him of fucking murder.
Let's invite a potential murderer over. Get him drunk.
God, what is this theory? Like, no one do that. Everyone?
Yeah, no, that's a terrible idea. Although, to be fair, Quillerin lives on his own with two cats and is, like, very lucky that he didn't die twice.
That Stan, we know of. We skipped some that books, we know too. Of.
It's true. Stan lives in a house with her, like, five dogs. And boyfriend, and now two grown Irish cousins staying with her. So it's like a little bit safer. That Kevin couldn't be like the craziest of murderers and like kill them all in their sleep, but she does have like a better setup for doing that.
It's a good point. And the only reason that, because Jake is with her kind of as she's deciding that and offering that to Kevin, and the only reason that he's not like, no, shut it down, is because he's like, okay, well, I'm obviously going to follow you home, and then Declan and Liam are going to be there, and like we're all going to be there through all of this, so we can figure this out together, basically, and like not leave one person alone with a shady character.
Right.
But yeah, so we do get some kind of weirdness back at, so that's that second night that we get, which almost brings us up to present. But so that night,
yeah,
in our time was last night, in my time was last night.
Yes.
Yeah. But so there's like some weirdness, like Kevin is introduced to Liam and Declan, and both of them are like, who the fuck are you? Like, they're really aggressive to Kevin, and Kevin's like, I'm worried about my friend, wouldn't you be worried about your friends? And they're like, they're basically just like really weird to him. And Kevin, yeah, even
but
tells,
I mean, to be fair, they also are not worried about Kevin's friend, aka their father, like they're not concerned. That's so they're true, kind of like, no, you're shady because our dad's shady and all of his friends are shady, why are you here?
True, yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah,
also I will point out that something very small that was still very shady happened. So when Stan was driving Kevin home, she was tailgated really closely.
Shit, yeah.
And in this, with, I don't remember if it had like out-of-state plates or not, I don't think they caught the plates, but it was this like black sedan type car that was like on her like bumper the entire time and made her really nervous because it was not great weather out.
Yeah,
she was like, who around here follows this closely in terrible weather? And then as soon as she turned into her house, they like slowed down, and it was one of those like, that's
not sketchy, right? They're probably just doing other things. And then, like, right. She tried to talk herself out of it. And I feel like it was glossed over a little bit, but definitely shady.
It's super shady. It's also, if you're being followed, a really bad follow job.
Right, yeah.
Because everyone knows that you are following, or at least yeah. being weird.
But Kevin didn't seem to get weird about it. So, like, he either knew someone was going to be following them, or he was just like, yeah, whatever, I'll deal with it later.
Well, no, what he says, which I thought was interesting and maybe a little bit of foreshadowing, if we're given foreshadowing in a book like this, I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
But what he said was something along the lines of, like, oh, that's nothing. Like, in Boston, people are, like, up your ass all the time, basically. Or, yeah. like, no, he said, but people in Boston will, like, nudge you off the road or something like that. Which, having driven in Boston, I was like, yeah, accurate. But also, I thought, oh, that might point to the fact that this person, even if Kevin didn't know who he was, that this person was actually from Boston and maybe was connected. Ooh, or maybe even nudged
someone off the road into a fiery car crash.
Ooh.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, that's right. That happens. And then the other kind of weirdness that happens, which might have just been a coincidence, but so Stan has decided that because they don't know whether or not, so basically when they hear the information that it could have been Seamus in this like fiery car crash, they mm-hmm. decide not to tell a bunch of people. They decide not to tell Jesse because they don't think she'll...
The police officer.
Right, right. Which I'm like, you know, you guys might not get along with maybe me. You should tell her.
Yeah, maybe you should tell her.
Yeah. But, so what they do is that they go home, and after they've gotten everyone, like, situated and had, like, the weird introductions, Stan goes up to her room alone, well, her and Jake's room alone, and makes a bunch of phone calls to different hospitals and morgues and places in... Maybe not morgues. I think it's just hospitals.
I think it's just hospitals, yeah. Okay.
In Boston, you know, basically trying to get any information about any John Does or any victims of that incident or, you know, obviously Seamus's name. And she can't find anything. But when she is finished and she opens the door to leave her room, Kevin is there. But he's also, like, apparently crossing in a way that made it look like he was going to the bathroom. So she was kind of like, that could have just been a weird coincidence. But also, like, why was he up here? There is a bathroom downstairs. Mm-hmm. But he had also mm-hmm. just used the bathroom mm-hmm. upstairs. But also, this is a mystery. So it's probably that.
So we don't know. That was sketchy. Mm-hmm. But she also didn't show him the bathroom downstairs. She showed him the bathroom upstairs. So
that's true. He had just taken a shower. Yeah.
And could be something, could be nothing.
She actually did make a good point, too, is that, you know, if he actually was a concerned friend, and if he had been going by to the bathroom, he could have also heard her, you know, say the name Seamus and been like, oh, my friend, like, what, you know, just, I mean, I would have done that if I were in that position of, like, what is she saying, like, or what right. is she finding out more information?
Yeah. I'm also, sure she didn't find out any more information, so it's one of those, like, what would he, I guess if she had found him in a hospital and he was, like, not actually a friend, he could have been like, oh, he's at that hospital, let's go finish the job. But she didn't actually find anything, so it's kind of like, right. I don't think she's, like, super concerned about it right now.
Right, yeah, exactly. So then, yeah, they have another kind of, like, fitful night of sleep, and then she sets her alarm again really early and wakes up at, like, 7:30 or something to try to get to the bakery by 8.
I mean, that's early for me.
I mean, it's early for me too. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I, as a baker, formerly have had earlier mornings.
Fair.
But she also doesn't even get to the shop quite yet because she goes to see her and Jake go to see Char first. Mm-hmm. Because the day earlier, previously, they had Stan had called just to see how Char was doing and had learned that Char was like in bed all day and wasn't really taking care of her bed and breakfast.
Her
and, like,
alpacas. Her bed and breakfast.
Oh, and her alpacas. I know. Well, I was lumping the alpacas into the bed and breakfast experience.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like she has like kind of a farmy type bed and breakfast. So she does have animals.
Sounds so that
she doesn't.
Cute.
usually take care of. It sounds like she usually runs the bed and breakfast, and Ray is the one who is like out tending the rest of the farm and the alpacas. So everyone's very concerned. Actually, this was a funny scene because everyone was so concerned about the alpacas that we at one point had like 6 people show up to take care of them.
Yeah, and basically she's like, I don't know how to do this, but there are a lot of you, so maybe you two do it, and everyone else come inside and we'll just eat breakfast, which is where we get the last bit of gossip that I think we really get.
Oh, the gossip after the alpacas.
Yeah, the gossip after the alpacas is going to be the name of this episode.
Yes. Perfect.
Sorry, my mind spun and I was
That's
like...
okay. I think you were talking about some of the patrons at the Airbnb.
Yes.
So they get into the kitchen after they decide who's going to be taking care of the alpacas and who's going to be eating breakfast. And so they get in there. I think it's the men are taking care of the alpacas and the women, so that being Char, Stan, and her mother Patricia, are in the Airbnb now, and they walk in on like everyone is kind of like, there's just like a hubbub going on, everyone's like in a tizzy and like talking over each other, and they're like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? And everyone, well, someone, the spokesperson of the group, of the patrons,
the mean girl,
is like, the head mean girl of the Airbnb guests is like, oh, haven't you heard? It's officially a murder. What?
Yeah. And she's saying a little bit gleefully, too. Like, she's a little bit like...
she's like, so she's like, I had no idea this town was going to be so exciting.
Yeah. And then poor Char is like, obviously, really upset because then she's like, oh, God, that means that someone is after Shane. Like, she kind of jumps to the conclusion that other people have too, which is like, that means that they are after Seamus. And that means that Ray is with him. And oh, God, like, maybe they're already dead. He's in the
fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So she had to sit down real fast.
Yeah, and I don't think gets back up yet.
I don't think gets back up either. She's been kind of a mess this whole book, which, fair, she's, this sounds like, has never had her husband leave her side, and now he's gone for 2 days, unexpectedly.
Yeah, in the midst of murderous circumstances.
Actually, the other thing that we learned in this part of the chapter that we didn't get expounded upon. When Stan was talking to Char outside, Char was like, oh, I feel like this is all my fault, but then we don't get any explanation, and Stan's like, what do you mean? We haven't heard yet what Char actually means by that, so so she could be a mess for other reasons, maybe out of guilt, but we don't know why.
That seemed really important. That was like just kind of, and again, right, it's like there's so many people milling about and so many like ways that people can be interrupted that they're like interrupted in the middle of that. And I think one of the last things that happens, correct me if I'm wrong because I might be forgetting the very end of the, you know, last chapter or two that we read, but one of the last things that happens is that Stan goes and confronts Jesse because she's like, oh my God, if Jesse has actually put out a statement, like I just need to know like exactly where she is on this, because like the rumor mill is going to be going, and like the rumor mill is now part of her, like people come into her business and gossip, and because she's so close to it. So she is on the way to Jesse's office and then finds Jesse at the farmers, the like the Christmas tree farmers place on the way into town. And so she stops and she's like, oh, Jesse's there. And so Jesse's in the car with her partner Lou, who I thought was really funny, their like interactions. Lou is always like, hi, Stan, and Jesse's always like, Stan, get out of here, Stan.
Damn it, Stan.
Yeah And then is like, don't encourage her, Lou. Like, you know, it's that kind of interaction, which is always really funny.
Yeah, and Lou's always like, give her a job. She can join us.
Yeah. And Jesse's like, I hate everyone.
Yeah.
So then they kind of, Jesse does confirm that she got the, was it the toxicology report back? Or she doesn't say.
I guess she does. She maybe doesn't say, but she does confirm kind of like begrudgingly. She's like, yes, fine, I'll admit. Since everyone else already knows, I will admit that we are dealing with a murder case and that's the way we're looking at it now. But I think we also glossed over the fact that she's at the Christmas tree place because that's one of the places that, and the murder guy's name again, Harold.
Harold.
Harold. Worked at in the past. So where what are the places that we've heard him work and like mess things up? So Seamus worked with Abby's husband and like messed everything up.
Yeah.
Harold worked at Izzy's and like messed everything up, and also the Christmas tree place and messed everything up.
And Harold, when he died, had a black eye that they didn't really think about until someone, I mean, again, it was rumor, so no one was really sure, but Jesse was probably, we don't 100% get a confirmation on that, but the rumor was that the guy who runs the Christmas tree shop or the Christmas tree farm had gotten really mad at Harold and had like gotten physical and like punched him. So Jesse was there to interview him. And then one of my favorite parts of that whole interaction was that Cyril, the newspaper guy, pops up out of fucking nowhere behind him and is like, can you confirm that? Can I get a quote?
Yeah. Like, Jesse's, I'm going to run that because I heard it, but if you don't want a quote with it, fine by me. And so Jesse's like, damn it, I'll give you a quote.
Fuck off. And Cyril was like, I was here to interview the Christmas tree shop or the Christmas tree farm guy. And can you tell I don't remember his name? Whoops.
That's fine. And I don't remember his name either.
And then Jesse's like, no, I am interviewing him first. Because Cyril was like, I was here to interview him. And Jesse was like, fuck off. No, I mean, she doesn't actually say that, but she says it with her eyes. So that was the last thing I remember. What was there anything else that kind of, I know there was like one, maybe one more little dangly cliffhanger-y thing that happens.
I will go to chapter 25 right now and we'll see.
Yes.
I don't think so. Oh, she did bring up, so like at the very end when Jesse was about to like kick both Stan and Cyril out of the world, Stan did bring up like, hey, are you kind of like maybe thinking that Harold wasn't the target here? Because if that's the case and it was actually Seamus who was supposed to be murdered, you are like way barking up the wrong tree. And like this Lester.
Yes.
Lester, the Christmas tree guy, was like, would not have even been a suspect at that point. So like, why are you talking to him if like this could potentially be a murder case? Not really a murder case, but like a case that like the murdered person was not actually the target, and we need to be looking at it in a different way. And Lou was like, oh yeah, good point.
Yeah, Stan,
good job. And Jesse's like, no, get out of my life.
Yeah, which was so funny that I was like, I mean, I guess it does make sense that like, especially in, I mean, I feel like you kind of, that trope is out there of like, you know, police taking one line of thinking and like just going wholeheartedly into that line of thinking. But I did think that was funny that like, I guess maybe Jesse didn't think, not that she didn't think of it, but that she was like so just not gonna go down that road, and that like maybe Lou hadn't even thought of it and was like, oh, that's a good point. And I was like, aren't you like paid to think these things through? Like, aren't you at least paid to know that that's an option?
Right. Yeah meh, I guess. I sort of got the impression that maybe Jesse had thought about it and was like, no, we're doing this first, and like I'll deal with that later, because we just found out for sure that this guy was murdered. Because I mean, it is one of those things where like, if you're, I've never been a police officer before, but if you're in like the justice system, there is a very like cut and dry way to do things, like very by the book, I think.
Yeah.
And like, it seems like Stan is ahead of them most of the time because she's going by like the rumor mill, which granted is much faster, but could also be wrong. And so I think it's one of those things where it's like, she's jumping to these conclusions based on what people are saying. And there are like so many possibilities that it could be because of what people are saying. And my guess is they're going to get to the same point at the same time. But, like, yeah. Stan's going to go through all of these loops of, like, what if it's this? What if it's this? Based on, like, what people are saying. Whereas Jessie, which we're not seeing because she's not a main character, she's going to get there in, like, a straight line because she's, like, doing things by the book.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because for as, like, mean and rude as we get Jessie to be, you never get the impression that she's, like, not good at her job, or that she's not like really invested in solving it in a like a non-biased way. So yeah, you got definitely, I think you're totally right. I think that's a really good point. And I think this is super random, but I was just thinking that like one of the little tidbits that we left out is that so her mom, who is getting married to the mayor, they are actually getting married on Christmas Eve. So I kind of wonder, and they keep like dropping little hints of like, you know, oh, we're not going to let this ruin, because even Tony the mayor is like, I'm not going to let this ruin this day for your mom or for us. And so I kind of wonder if it is going to ruin that day for them, if you know what I mean.
It's all going to come out at the wedding.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, if we're going to have like a cat pointing fingers in the middle of a wedding ceremony.
I mean, so far we've had like very little wedding talk and very little cats, so I'd be really excited if both of those things happened.
It's true. It's true. Well, I'll write an alternate ending and send it to your Kindle.
Okay, great. I would love that.
So yeah, I guess that's as far as we've gotten right now. I'm not sure there are any other tidbits yet, any other clues. That's kind of all the big things. We're leaving Stan at her shop with some of her dogs that she's taken to work.
And yeah. Oh, that's true. She has dogs with her this entire time. And I always forget that.
I know.
Because they're like not really mentioned. But for the first like quarter of the book, she had her dog Scruffy with her. And yeah, he'd like have no interaction with Scruffy other than he's like mentioned a couple of times, and she's like, oh yeah, Scruffy followed me, and you're like, what, you're at like a bar?
Yeah
But then yeah, this day she has two of her dogs in the car with her, so she's like stopping all of these places with her dogs. But I just think that's like so funny that like no one in this book seems to have children, but everyone seems to have, like, at least five dogs.
Well, but there was one child with a very specific name. Do you remember what it is?
Eva?
Yes! Like, the only child in the book is named after me.
No, there was a second child. I think Jessie has a daughter, and Eva was the friend.
Right, yeah, because they had the sleepover, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the daughter's name. Lillian?
Like, yeah, I think it's Lily. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Lily. Right. Okay. Yeah,
which is cute too.
Yeah.
Cute name. It's cute. Yeah. Eva and Lily. Very cute.
Yeah. But yeah, everyone's a couple with like three dogs and like maybe a cat.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if so, because the first part of the book has been so like running around all between different places. But it is called Purring Around the Christmas Tree. So I wonder if the second half is more like indoors, maybe as the weather gets worse.
Well, the second half is when we're going to get a Christmas tree, because that is one of the errands that she's going to run today. She's going to get a Christmas tree. And that's on her list of things to do. It's like the whole family is going to get a Christmas tree today. So I think that's
true.
Coming up, like she wasn't supposed to be at, nope, I don't remember his name already.
Lester, you just said it.
Literally just said it.
You just proved your own theory wrong. You even repeated it out loud.
I'm not saying it works with my brain, just that it should with other people's. Yes, so she wasn't supposed to be at Lester's yet. She just stopped there because she saw Jessie there. But at the mid to end of the day, she's going with Jake and maybe his dad Peter and the two cousins Declan, and
you got it. I believe in you.
Declan, and, oh my god, it's a heavenly
Liam.
I knew it was one of the Hemsworth names.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Good work. Yeah, which is perfect, obviously perfect timing, because that gives her the chance then to interview Lester outside of like Jesse having done it and Cyril having done it. So,
but that also gives us a Christmas tree for someone to purr around.
That's true. More importantly, that does give us a Christmas tree, which is the name of the title. So maybe that does mean more to the mystery than meets the ear.
Oh my god, maybe one of his feral cats is purring around the Christmas tree that they pick, and they're like, it's a good sign, a cat loves it.
Oh my god, well, I was also thinking we haven't met her other cat yet, so
that's true.
Maybe once she gets to the tree home, it'll be the other cat. Buster. That's true. No, it's not Buster.
You're Betty.
So bad with names.
We've barely met one of them. We should hopefully meet Nibbles.
It sounded like you said nipples and not nibbles, which I assume you said.
I meant nibbles with bees.
I heard nipples with bees.
Nipples. Is that the other cat's name?
I don't remember.
It was something with an N that was like kind of cute, but like kind of like a generic cat name, I think.
A little bit, yeah. It's fair.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember. Anyway, we haven't met the other cat. We haven't met the other cat. We also haven't met the feral cats. We haven't met the Christmas tree. There's a lot of things that we are lacking in information, so hopefully it'll all come together.
Stay tuned next week for the meeting of the Christmas tree. We can at least promise the meeting of the Christmas tree. We can't promise the meeting of any other cats, but we
unless hope everything goes up in flames and then there will be no Christmas trees.
That's true.
We can't promise anything.
That's true. That's a good point. We take away all responsibility here for what happens in the second half, because we truly have no idea.
Yep.
But we hope you'll join us next week. We're going to read the second half of Purring Around the Christmas Tree, which I am really enjoying. Like, it's really, like, gossipy and fun. And
yeah. And I think,
serious.
I do feel a little bit like I'm cheating on Lillian Jackson-Braun and Quillerin by enjoying this book. But I think it just has, like, I don't, you know how, like, the Cat Who books don't really have that like red herring, and so you kind of like know what's gonna happen the entire way through the book. It's just like a fun, like mindless read. I feel like this one has a little bit more mystery and a little bit more thinking involved, which is nice.
Although I wonder if that's gonna start happening in the next books that we're gonna read of Lillian Jackson Braun, because we did see a little bit more of that in The Cat Who Knew a Cardinal.
We did. Yeah. No, you're totally right.
Yeah, this one's definitely a little more brain teasery, which is cool. Like, it's a little bit more puzzle-y, which is really nice. And I like a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I should probably go. My tea has run low, and I have to blow all of the snot out of my nose.
Gross.
I hope no one else out there is sick. Oh, yeah, you have to go get your cat food, don't you?
I have to go get my cat food. I didn't want to leave the house today. That was like on my to-do list of like, don't leave the house today. But I have too many things on my grocery list that actually need to happen today, like cat food and litter and sponges. Water.
Oh yeah, that's all fair items.
Yeah.
All right, well, you go do that. I'll go not hopefully get sicker.
Yeah, and go feel better.
Thanks. Pet Mushu for me and Chuni. Now that you have
Chuni. Now that I have Chuni. They're friends. They're sleeping on the same bed.
Yeah, Julia sent our family a picture of them sleeping probably like a full arm's length apart and was like, they're best friends.
They're sleeping pretty close together, actually, but they are sleeping with backs to each other and a comforter mountain in between. So they can't actually see each other, and I'm pretty sure they don't know the other one is there. But they're sleeping on the same bed, and if you take it from the top angle where you can't see the comforter mountain, then it looks like they're best friends.
It still looks like they're pretty far away. But I'm behind it. I think they're best friends too. I'm not saying they're not.
I think they're best friends.
I agree.
It's gonna be fine. There's gonna be harmony in my house eventually.
There is. It's 100% fine. Everything is fine. And as a friend of mine in college used to say, everything is fine and nothing is fucked. I mean, a friend from college who is still my friend currently. Didn't mean to make that sound like she was out of my life. She is not.
Yes. Well, great.
Yep. On that note, bye, cat people. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you're having a really festive start to your holidays. Yeah.
Or end to your holidays celebrate Hanukkah.
Yep. Exactly that, too. I'm trying to think of all of our. So if you want, you can follow us on social media. We're Paranormal Pod on Twitter and Paranormal Captivity Pod on Instagram. We have a Gmail, paranormalcaptivitypod@gmail.com, if you want to talk to us. What else? Oh, we have a Patreon, which we're so excited about. We've already posted our first Kitty World news for the $5 and up donors. So we decided one of the perks was going to be an extra Kitty World news monthly for the Patreon patrons, who we're so, so grateful for. So you can find us on patreon.com/paranormal. Oh, shit. I think it's just Paranormal Captivity. Oh, my God.
Okay, you can just record that one word later and stick it in like a real one.
Or just like, cut it all out.
Like Seamus.
Yeah.
Seamus.
Jairus. Paranormal Captivity. You can find us on paranormalcaptivity@ oh my god, I'm not even gonna continue to try this. You can find us on Patreon. We're Paranormal Captivity. I am very sick, but love you all.
Sounds good.
Yeah, all right.